It's Friday, August 30th, 2013, and welcome to episode 154 of Tech Talk for Teachers. I'm Tom Grissom.
I'm Mike Joya.
And I'm Cindy Rich.
Welcome to Tech Talk for Teachers, the show about teaching and learning with technology. This episode, we welcome everyone back to school, and the doors to our nation's schools are open for the masses. So, Cindy, what do you have for us this time?
Well, you know, going on our Happy New Year theme that we seem to be going with, there's a brand new opportunity for professional development the library just put out just a few minutes ago, actually. And I thought we'd talk a little bit about some of the new and different ways that different institutions and groups are reaching out to teachers and how teachers are engaging and interacting with those folks. And so this is a new webinar that they're going to do, something brand new. And I thought we'd talk about that a little bit.
Okay. And then we'll follow that up. I've got a segment called Technology Triage. As the masses hit the doors of the schools, all the technology people are extremely busy. So what can we do to help everyone out a little bit and do a little bit of troubleshooting on our own?
That's right.
Okay, Mike, what are you going to talk about this week?
Well, I'm going to talk about the rash of security issues or downtime that a lot of big-name companies have been having this past month, to include like Amazon, Apple with iCloud. Google actually went down for
a little bit. 5 minutes.
I mean, the world almost ended there for 5 minutes. And then, of course, just recently, the Syrian electronic army hacking into the domain name holders for Twitter and New York Times and defacing a few of New York Times' web pages.
Okay, so we have a professional development opportunity for you this month. A little bit of technology troubleshooting tips and some corporate hacking going on. So here we go. Up first today, we have Cindy with us. And once again, Cindy's getting ready to go on the road. So we needed to grab her here real quick. And off the top here, I wanted her to say something. I guess she's got a new announcement here that's a little bit time sensitive. So
it is, it is. And I just received this, so I'm pretty excited to have an opportunity to share it before I leave and that. But what it is, it's a webinar from the Library of Congress that's going to happen at 7 p.m. Eastern Time on September 5th. About the all about Constitution Day, which is coming up.
Okay, that's coming up very fast because we'll produce this show and put it out on August 30th, so that's a pretty short time window.
Yeah, we're talking a week or less.
A week, yeah.
And that, and so they're doing this, and it can accommodate up to 1,000 people. I don't know how interactive it's going to be, but it is going to be a live as opposed to recorded. And so, I mean, even though this is a cool opportunity, it really, it's brand new. It's something new the Library of Congress Ed Outreach Department is trying. And just one another way they're trying to reach teachers. And I think it's pretty exciting. It just shows how all of these institutions, something like the Library of Congress, that we don't think about cutting-edge technology when we think of some of these old institutions, and how they're embracing this technology and change to be able to reach teachers all over the country, all over the world. And, you know, just all of these different things that are happening with webcasts, podcasts, webinars, you know, everything.
And the thing that's a little different, this is a live, you know, so many of those are pre-recorded or whatever. So I'm assuming they might have a possibility to answer questions.
Exactly.
And have a little bit more interaction and things with that.
Yeah, because I tend to think, now with 1,000 people, I'm not 100% sure, but, you know, tend to with webinars, right, you have an opportunity to raise your hand and
or have
post
a chat
questions.
Or have a chat window and post. I've been involved with a lot of them.
Yeah.
You just post a question off to the side, and then a moderator will go through and screen them. And
yeah, so I'm just really curious how this is going to happen and what to do. So we'll put, there's a link I found for the registration. I can't find a whole lot of other information just yet.
Okay.
So we'll put what we have on the show notes, and then as we get more, we'll add that.
Okay, and in particular, if you're a social studies teacher, you know, this would be of interest, but it's for Constitution Day, and, you know, I think it's probably any teacher, but like you said, we'll put the link out on the show notes for any information about that.
Yeah, and anybody that's new and doesn't really know about PD from the Library of Congress, this may be a way to kind of get your feet wet and check out what we're doing. doing and what we're all about and learn a little bit about it.
Okay, so we'll put that out there, and it is time sensitive, so if you're hearing this, you probably need to go out and check that
That's
link right,
right
now. For our second segment today, I wanted to take a little bit of time since everybody's going back to school or will soon be going back to school. We've already had our going into our second week here. So
we are.
We're
knee deep.
Yes, we are getting started here. But always one of the things, no matter what school you go into, you know, doors across the nation open up and everybody, all the masses come all at once. So it's like this giant tidal wave of faculty, staff, and students coming back to school. And of course, part of that is keeping up with all the technology.
Right.
And there have been thousands of changes over the summertime, probably no matter where you're at. And, you know, what are some of the things, we're going to call this segment technology triage, because we kind of have to pick our battles there that first week because there's so many people coming back. So what are some of the things that we can do as teachers to kind of help some of our technology people out and kind of prioritize some of the things? One of the big things that I don't think a lot of people realize, whether you're, you know, a K-12 school or a university, just the sheer registration system of students coming in, students being dropped, students adding. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of a moving target all the time. New faculty being hired, how do you get them into the system? And then, you know, how do you give them email accounts? And
just the launch.
Right, just to get started out of the gate. So we just thought we'd just start with some of the basics, and these may seem like very basic questions, but, you know, I was saying probably more than 50% of the time, the first three or four of these questions, if you go through, will take care of the problem. And the first one, I guess I always like to say is, you know, whenever you can come back to school and things and see the technology staff or whatever, you know, just say hello, you know, how was the summer and you know, how are things going? Because they're in the heat of the battle trying to, you know,
trying
to get all the systems up and going. So
That's
techies
right.
are people too and like to like to be noticed. So, but the first question obviously is it on?
All right.
And that may, again, sound like a silly question, but the computers and things have been moved around by custodial staff.
Right.
Floors have been waxed. You know, a lot of things have moved. And it may be something as simple as, you know, a switch is off or something.
Right.
And the second question is it plugged in?
And especially if somebody else taught in the room before you.
Yes.
It's a difference, you know, at higher ed and
or
some high schools, too, where you have more than one person using the system.
Right.
You just assume it's on and the last person used it the
right.
same way that you're going to use it.
Right.
So you go in and get ready to hit the ground running, and then all of a sudden it's like, whoa, something
right.
is different.
Right. So I guess the first question, you know, does it have power? Is it plugged in?
With the basics.
Just the very basics. And then usually the technology person will come along and say, well, have you rebooted the computer?
Right.
Always one of them, no matter whether you have a PC, a Mac, or a Linux computer.
But we never want to do that.
I know. But that might be that one thing that just prevents that one call to put out some of the fires that are being fought out there. And then the other one that I always like to tell people is to check with your neighbor. You know, are your neighbors experiencing the same problem? It's like, hey, I can't get to the internet. Well, can your neighbor get to the internet?
Yeah.
So do
and
some.
And actually, we just had that on campus yesterday because the Desire to Learn program
yes.
was struggling.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a colleague who said something to me, and I'm like, oh, no, I was using it and noticed there's a message that
right.
they're having problems. And then she went to that screen and saw it, and she's like, oh, okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's like, you know, you ask yourself, is it me? And for Desire to Learn, for example, our main splash page out there, we'll put, you know, in that particular case, they were
mm-hmm.
having trouble, issues of being overloaded, the servers being overloaded. So, you know, in that case, we had to wait for the problem to resolve. And then whenever it was resolved, there was another post saying, you know, all systems are now,
right.
you know, ready to go. So.
Yeah, so it's always good just to ask somebody handy and just say,
mm-hmm.
have you tried to use this today or have you had any issues with it?
Mm-hmm. The other thing, you know, if you're having trouble and you're starting to panic a little bit, probably one of the questions running through your head is, do I have a backup of my files if my computer
mm-hmm.
is down? And I always say, if you're thinking that, it's probably time to make a backup. So once you get that system up and going, be sure to make a fresh backup of things. The other thing this time of year is a lot of people are still printing out paper. We try to discourage that as much as possible, but there are some cases where it's kind of unavoidable still. So if you cannot print, is there an alternative printer around? Here at EIU, we have many systems that we have different printers that are mapped. So if one printer is down, try a second printer.
Actually, I experienced something like that today or yesterday. I don't know. They're running together now. But I was trying to print something, and it wouldn't print. And I'm like, what the heck? And somehow my computer, my desktop, was sending it to a different printer. So I don't know if somebody else got, and of course I printed it like five times because it wasn't coming out of mine.
That's the other thing.
So yeah. Someone else probably got that. But just those common sense things that you that don't even click, that just come naturally most of the time, double check those little details.
The other common thing whenever you print, and if you print it two or three times, check that printer queue, because it's that first job that's stopping everything.
Right.
And once you release that job, then here comes your second and your third copies. So. And then, if that doesn't work, you can always save the document or whatever to a USB drive. And is there, rely on your neighbors. Is there a neighbor that you could go over and have them print out whatever it is? Or, as I say, better yet, save it to a PDF file and, keep it electronic all the way. And I'm a huge fan of OneNote. So OneNote has allowed me to become a lot more paperless than what I used to be. I'm storing a lot of things in OneNote. The other thing, no matter, what school things, everybody kind of will have their own system. So report the problem to the help desk or whatever your official channel is. And I know everybody gets this. We'll be walking down the hall and it's like, hey, Tom, I'm having trouble here. And then walk three more steps and hey, Tom. And then by the time you get back to your office, you have six things and you can remember three or four
exactly.
of them.
Exactly.
So it does help to call those into your help desk or, as I said, however your organization handles that. Again, just some basic things whenever you're having trouble, like when's the last time you were successful using it or the last time that you had access to the system? And maybe that will jar your memory on something that's different. As I said, this time of year, just getting out of the gate, accounts is a huge issue.
Right.
And again, that's something that's very simple, but whenever you have 10,000 or 20,000 or 30,000 of them,
a little bottlenecking can occur.
Yeah, it adds up. Another thing talked about this week, one of the things that we did over the summertime, we updated the smart board software. Uh-huh. We're now at version 11.2. We went through all of our classrooms. We call them technology enhanced classrooms, and we upgraded the smart board. But one of the things that we missed was something called Smart Ink. So we're having to go back to the classroom and enable that, because many of our instructors use that Smart Ink. For example, you open a PowerPoint and then you want to use one of the, like a red pen from the smart board tray.
Right.
And if Smart Ink's not enabled, that won't work.
Oh, okay.
So, that's something that we missed here on about a dozen different classrooms. So we're going back to make sure that that's in startup. We can do it after the fact, but it's always one of those, as a technology person, you try, preempt any problems that you have. And by the way, that first day, I always make it a point. I go around to every classroom, turn on the computer, turn on the projector, document cameras, make sure everything's working, the audio. And if that just saves one call, it's worth it. Not only that, but also just one call, just taking the students' time out of class that first day. You want everything to go as smooth as you can make it.
And things like that you don't notice from your perspective, it's good when faculty or students or whoever, staff, let you know that those things are happening, because then you can fix them
in all
the classrooms.
And please let us know. Don't think that it's a burden or anything. Please let us know, because that next instructor walking into the room is probably going to have the same problem.
Right.
And we want to get it fixed. Internet access, do you have internet access? Again, check the cable. Sometimes things move around, and in our classrooms we have the LAN cable.
Yeah.
And then I guess the other thing, as a teacher and as teacher educators, we definitely stress, have a plan B.
Oh my gosh, yes.
Anything?
When technology is good, it's very good, but when it's bad, it's really bad.
Yeah. So always have that plan B in your back pocket, because things are going to happen.
Yep.
And again, for a teacher education college, we want to stress, you know, stay calm, stay collected, just handle the situation. You're a professional. Mm-hmm. The class lesson can go on.
It's an opportunity to model for our students, the pre-service teachers, that, you know, okay, this is probably going to happen to you at some point. And so how you react is going to dictate how the students react. And if you freak out, they're going to freak out.
Right.
So if you just stay calm and breathe in, breathe out, move on.
Right. And like I said, I mean, as a professional, I think, you know, most teachers have that plan B out there. If we lose electricity, I still have class. In fact, I kind of look forward to that. It's a little bit refreshing not to have some of the technology. It's like, okay, let's have a discussion over whatever's appropriate for the lesson out there and kind of turn that technology off for a day, being forced to do it.
Unplugged.
Yep. The lesson's unplugged. You know, we try to keep everything up to date here the best we can. Over the summertime, I think we updated over 500 devices, so that just keeps things going. You know, the security side, Mike would say, you know, make sure everything's up to date. So, again, some of that preemptive problem solving out there. And then, depending upon your situation, whenever you know, again, particularly for teachers that are logged into like grading systems and things or attendance, you know, like many K-12 systems, if you're in a room situation, make sure you log out or lock your computer screen. Whenever we've all heard the stories about students changing their grades.
Yeah, well, and it's always fun when we walk in and you know you sit down in a lab or in a classroom and a student's Facebook is up, a student's email is up just right there, and it's so tempting not to put something on there.
In fact, I need to give that lesson because we check out our laptop carts. Mm-hmm. And then this morning, whenever we got them back, we went through them. And this is, I guess, another lesson. You know, whenever you start out the beginning of semester, you want to start out on the right foot. Mm-hmm. So I always say whenever I loan out equipment, I want to, if I'm the one, you know, borrowing that equipment, I want to give it back in as good a shape or better than what I received it.
Heck yeah.
Well, we had a couple of laptop carts come back a little bit, maybe not plugged in right and didn't shut them down right. And in going through them, there were two students that did not log out of their email accounts, didn't shut the computer down. So it was completely open.
Right.
So I need to give that little mini lecture and just, you know, particularly in a public space, you know, using public equipment.
Yeah.
You know, if you leave an email account, you know, who knows what somebody's going to do.
Oh, heck yeah.
So, and that'll come back and reflect on you because it's your account. And then whenever I get up from my desk, I always kind of, I'm in a habit on a Windows computer. If you do the Windows key and L, that will lock your screen.
I didn't know that.
So many people rely on the screensavers. You know, after 10 minutes, uh-huh, it'll go back and you'll lock your computer out. But if I get ready to walk out and do...
I had no idea.
Windows key L, that locks it. And then, of course, now I have to type my password in, but that's kind of the whole point whenever you wake up your computer. Yeah. And again, I think of that classroom teacher, you know, with the attendance system or whatever.
Yeah. Or the test they're making or anything like that that you just don't want students to see just yet. Not ready for their debut.
Yeah. So now I have to log back in here.
I'll be darned. There's my lesson learned today.
There we go. So we got one down there. and then, you know, as far as passwords and things, We have as much as possible, we try making as many systems with a single sign-on. We've got something called PSync here at EIU that, you know, kind of ties together like our banner, mm-hmm, our Desire to Learn, our Astra, our domain accounts. So that simplifies that as much as possible. There's always going to be outliers with systems that aren't compatible, so you have to have a separate account. But minimizing that definitely helps. And choosing, you know, I'm sure Mike and will want to do a lesson one of these days on, you know, choosing, in fact, he might want to do it this week, choosing an effective password. You know, that's why they're so complex.
Yeah.
And then finally, this is a prime time for phishing scams.
Mm-hmm.
With everybody coming back to school, a lot of phishing scams will say, hey, you know, I'm your college's IT department or your school's IT department, and try to get you to fall victim, you know, filling out a form, giving away passwords. So, you know, be smart and be safe and stay secure there. So just a few hints and tips there, just as we start off the beginning of the school year, and hopefully that'll help you out. Up next is our security spotlight, and this year has been an extremely busy year, busy summer anyway, for the hackers out there. So we have Mike here with us, and it's been about a month since our last podcast, and we're just kind of going down through just some of the things that have happened over the last month, and it's getting to be quite a long list. Yeah,
pretty long list. With Google, Dropbox was just reverse engineered. There's a nice little and presented at a conference.
And then there's been some high profile, you know, just everyday names that we hear of. Amazon Web Services, which I guess apparently Instagram and Flipboard run on because they were down in the last week.
Outlook
had some issues earlier.
iCloud. And then, of course, yesterday the big one was Twitter and the New York Times. Mainly New York Times, mostly Twitter is just their picture service was hacked. But the hackers actually got through Melbourne IT, a corporation which does their domain name hosting.
Was that for the Twitter or the New York Times?
For both. They're both for there. Both? Also, Amazon, Google, and Microsoft also use that company for their domain naming services. But the hackers, which was the Syrian Electronics Army or hacker group, just rerouted the DNS, a domain service servers, to point in other directions, which for like Twitter just caused issues that you couldn't view pictures.
Yeah, I noticed in the timeline, but it was odd because some would show and, you know, some, I'd say about half and half whenever I was doing, I didn't know what was going on. But
yep. And then defaced a few New York Times pages, supposedly.
Yeah, I didn't check this morning. I assume it's back up and going.
Yeah, there was a few pictures on my Twitter app on my phone, so I'm assuming they're going. So yeah, it's been very busy for them. For hackers and some of the big services out there with issues.
Yeah, and there's, you know, as a user of those services, we're really at the mercy of those providers
and
providing. But there's nothing that we can really do short of preparing yourselves. You know, as teachers, we rely on, you know, like Flipboard or something like that. I mean, it's not mission critical or anything, but if you had a lesson plan or something revolving around that, you would be out of luck.
Right. And then Google, of course, people probably thought the world was coming to an end.
Yeah, Google. Yeah, that set off some alarm bells.
With Google going down, that was probably...
I think that was the first time in its history, wasn't it? First time ever, like, went dark for like five minutes or something, lost services.
Yeah, it was a pretty big deal.
But, you know, being a worldwide company, it's hard to have like a global outage because you have all these redundant
data. Yeah, failover systems, and you can reroute some stuff to other areas that hopefully can pick up slack.
But it's not like rebooting a PC. Yeah. Can you imagine? Let's reboot Google and bring everything. Of course, Apple had to do that with their dev center. And like I said, a lot of their services were down, and I don't know if they're still up, but well over a month on some of them.
But that, I mean, that's the thing with the get back to Dropbox, because I think a lot of organizations, be it universities, schools, even personally, people start using Dropbox because it's a free service.
And it's easy.
It's easy. You can store things out in the cloud, and so you can access it from any computer that has an internet access or device, because you can get Dropbox for all your devices. But people need to understand that Dropbox uses Google hosting services or data centers, and Google has data centers all over the world. So if you're storing sensitive information, your information could be in Russia.
Right.
It could be stored physically in Russia. It could be stored physically in the Middle East. It could be stored physically in wherever there's a data center.
And for like corporations, you know, worried about trade secrets and things, that's certainly a concern.
Right.
And also for governments as well.
Right. Right. But even down to teachers and faculty and staff, they may have students' school information, what we call FERPA. Information, you know, federal education information like GPAs and stuff if that gets released, that causes issues for the organization because that is not supposed to be publicly released without permission.
Anything confidential, you know, I wouldn't put out there.
Yeah. So in my line of work, it's hard because it's easy. And here we don't really have a great hosted cloud system, on campus. And Dropbox is a lot easier for everyone else, but they have to be conscious. You know, it's everyone's responsibility for information security. So they just have to understand the risks that they're doing and bringing forth by using Dropbox.
Yeah, that's kind of what I say, you know, like lesson plans or something that you don't mind being public out there. Because as you said, I mean, it just takes that one vulnerability for some of that information to get away.
Right.
And then last month, I believe we were talking about a couple of the systems, like, you know, the Ubuntu forms. I guess it was the Apple Dev Center. You know, they got the usernames and things, and we're phishing. That's the other thing I think we should mention, since it's back to school time and things. I think, I don't know, you can tell me, but I would think that this would be a spike in the number of phishing attempts.
You know, I've been here at the university for a little over a year now. So this is my second, start of the school year I've seen. And last year we worked really hard at phishing. We started a way to report phishing emails. Mm-hmm. You just forward it to us and we start, we do our thing going after it. We'll block any links in the email that if you're on Eastern's network, that blocks them that. We'll notify through Twitter. And we also will see how many are in people's mailboxes. If it is, we'll try to work with those individuals to remove that message. And actually, we've seen, knock on wood, right now, phishing is actually down a lot on campus. So I don't know if it's just increased user awareness.
Yeah, well, part of that preemptive, going out there, because typically whenever a phishing attack outbreaks, it's just like a blanket. Let's just throw out as many as we can. And if you can block that, before all the other users get to doing that, you're really doing yourself a favor, because you're protecting the users from, going down that path.
And like I said, we're working real, being able to block the links on campus once you're on our network, from allowing someone to go, if they click the link in the email, it takes them nowhere. They get a timeout and they're like, this is broken. And, that raises the flag immediately for most people. And just a lot of more people are more conscious now. We get a lot of the email reporting of phishing is this phishing with question marks. And then we provide them a little training. And, for a while there, we're getting a lot of spam sent to us saying, is this phishing?
But you'd rather have that.
Exactly. I'd rather have to do a little extra work and do some personalized training with that person and talk them through the difference between spam and phishing than them to just say, oh, it's nothing.
Yeah.
So we have seen it gone down, and hopefully that's a trend that continues to happen. But last year it was terrible.
Yeah.
Our school year last year was just, I think it was, we were receiving tons of phishing emails.
Yeah. So that's good news. Earlier, again, we're recording this a little bit in a couple of different stages. Yesterday, I had Cindy on, and we went through some of the basic troubleshooting, kind of back-to-school type things of moving things around, and, it's like, is it plugged in, is it turned on type of things as you go through and doing that. Some other things security-wise, I kind of look at this, kind of a start of a semester and end of a semester, doing some housekeeping and cleaning up some things and doing that. I'm reorganizing some of my mail and things, making some backups. It's always a good time to do some backups.
Right.
But other things that you might give for advice?
It's probably a good time. We don't require our students right now to change their password, but this is probably a good time to do that. To do it now as you start the school year, because you'll start using it a lot more and it'll be easier to remember. Mm-hmm. Where if you change it right before you leave for the end of the year, you're going to forget it. Mm-hmm. And then you're going to change it anyway. So change your password, making sure that your computer is still receiving it's like Windows updates if you're using Windows, any patching that needs to happen. And then also make sure your antivirus is up to date. And it might be a good time just so you're starting fresh for the school year to kind of do using Malwarebytes to see if you have any malware, spamware on your computer and get that removed, so your computer's kind of give it a fresh start. You send kids to school with new clothes and new shoes, might as well send your computer, start your computer up fresh and new.
Right. And because it is a new school year, we have new faces and things coming on. Some of the first time, our freshmen have ever been, in a college environment, university environment, and in the labs. And I talked with Cindy about this. I've already had a couple of cases, in a public lab where a student will come in, check their email, and walk away and not log out.
Right.
So again, particularly in any type of public environment, and, I've just trained myself over the years. I mentioned to Cindy, Windows key L will lock your screen whenever you get up and walk away.
Or Control Alt Delete and then enter if you don't have some of the older keyboards.
Windows 7 or Windows 8,
don't have the Windows key on them.
But,
things like that. If you help someone out, if you see them get up and just leave their computer with their email open or whatever, sign them out.
Sign them out, and if you see them, make them aware that they left it open, that there could be consequences.
Right. And you could say, you could just, you know, not do that and say, well, it's not me, so who cares? But if that person's account gets compromised, it's just going to slow the, like for us, it would slow the whole network. When someone's email account gets compromised, it slows down the whole network. Because, you know, they spam from those accounts. They send out thousands of messages and an hour.
Yeah. Plus, it's just the right thing to do. And the golden rule, you know, if you did that, you know, you would hope that somebody would be so kind and not malicious.
Right. So that's, you know, so help them out. You know.
Yeah.
And, you know, you get someone that's not as technologically, I like to say, savvy. You know, just help them out. Help them through things, just the little things that help them out through the day. Like, you know, lock your screen. If you're going to go away, lock your door. Because for information security, we worry about just physical space, too.
I used to have a shop teacher that every – back in the days when we had shop, what was real shop, we always had tools and everything out. And at the end of the period, you'd have to lock up the tools and put them in the cabinet. And we had the little shadow cutouts, you know, that the tool was here.
Yep.
And his saying was, lock those tools up. We want to keep the honest people honest.
Yep.
So that helps, just a little bit of protection there. My technology pick of the week this week is a program I found whenever I was doing my blog series, 30 Days with a Surface RT Tablet. And I've been looking for a good screencasting app that will work on specifically the Surface RT because that particular tablet does not run x86 program, so it won't run like Camtasia, which is kind of my favorite screencasting application out there. But I did run across this one, and they have a free version, and the paid version is only $3.49, so I liked it so much I went ahead and bought it.
Well, you're splurged.
Yes, I did. So, but this one is called Record Voice and Pen. It's very simple. It's very easy to use, and I'm finding a lot of applications out there. I don't know if you were using any on your iPad, but there's one called Explain Everything that's really popular out there, and this is kind of along the lines of an Explain Everything.
Oh, okay.
So it's working out really well. It just has a quick recording. You literally hit the record button, and then I've got one of the stylus pens that I use, and just as the title says, record voice and pen. As you write on the screen, it's recording what you're writing on the screen and your voice at the same time. Very easy to do. Whenever you finish, you export it out to an MP4 file, and you can have it up to YouTube like in 10 minutes. So,
very cool.
So
it's all kinds of classroom applications or something like that.
Yeah. So I'll provide a link out in the show notes, and I think that was for day 30. That was the last one I found. I've been finding a lot of really good apps for the Windows 8 tablet. So if you're interested, you might want to check the rest of that blog out as well. Okay, Cindy, what do you have?
Well, I'm just actually wondering what your next 30-day adventure is. You're
talk me out of it. I keep saying that I'm not going to do this again, but coming up in September and October, we have the new technology announcements again. But I need to lay off that for a while.
Yeah, we're going to have an intervention if you try to do another one, right? All right, well, something I stumbled across, as part of my Teaching with Primary Sources activities, been doing some things with the March on Washington 50th anniversary. And so I started looking around for some resources for a class and found that CNN has a student news section I didn't know about. Mm-hmm. So it's something new for me anyway. It's created for students, and it's presented. It's a 10-minute news clip, highlights of current events of the day, and that, but the real news, and that. But then they also support it with maps and links to other resources, and there's a whole transcript available. You know, it's multimedia, and it's just a really cool resource that I had no idea was out there. They provide sort of a curriculum guide, and then there's questions that you can give students to answer during.
Mm-hmm. So kind of a little current events segment that you could, you know,
it is.
For like that first period or whatever in the morning to have them.
Right,
watch.
And that, but it was really interesting because they were talking about the wildfires. They talked about Syria, so this is real news. Mm-hmm. It's not, you know, changed. I mean, they use events that they're talking about today on CNN. And that, and it's presented for middle and high school students. But it's just a really cool site, and it doesn't cost anything. So I'm hoping teachers will check it out. I like it.
Okay, we'll put a link in the show notes for that one. Okay, Mike, what do you have for your tech pick?
I have an app for, well, it goes for both my iPhone and my iPad, and it syncs in between, but it's called Budget. It's pretty interesting. It goes along the lines of the envelope scheme, where you take a little bit of your paycheck and you put it in an envelope, and then you only spend out of the envelope. But it's all virtualized, and you can set up reoccurring expenses, unlimited amount of envelopes, and it's really good to help me like track my budget, because I don't really use cash anymore. I don't even have a checkbook, and it's really good because I pay myself every month a small part of my, well, a portion of my paycheck that I can spend on whatever I want. But, you know, then everything else goes towards my bills, savings, but it's all in the same checking account in my bank. So I don't want to overuse my personal spending when it needs to go to a bill or something, because my bill payments are due all randomly through the month. So this way, like, I can buy something. Like, if I go to the store and buy something, I buy it, get my receipt, I click the envelope that's my cash, and I just type in the expense and what it was, and just hit it, and it subtracts it from the total amount I gave myself at the beginning of the month, and then I know how much I have.
Does it have like bar graph or something?
It does. It'll have a little bar graph like how much you got left. You can change the little picture so you know, like, quickly looking, like, once, like, I have one, it's house bills. So
will it carry over from month to month?
It will. It also will do reoccurring. So, like, if you know you have a bill that comes out every day or every month on the 28th or something like that, it'll automatically take that out of your budget, which will happen.
I kind of do the same thing, but the old-fashioned way. So
yeah,
I've got my Xbox One envelope started.
Oh, okay. There so you go.
There's not enough months in between now and when it comes out.
Yeah.
That's another story.
And I'm like that too. Like, I take a small portion of my paycheck every month, and I take it out, and I use that to pay, to put into savings accounts. But you can open unlimited amount of savings accounts with them, under one main account. And that way I'll have one for like family birthdays, Christmas. Yeah. I always was doing that. I would wait till the last minute to buy Christmas gifts. And then, of course, I'm only using my the December month paycheck.
It doesn't stretch far enough.
Yeah, and to buy all these presents. And on top of that, my monthly bills didn't go away and my paycheck didn't increase. So I was scraping by to find gifts for everyone. Yeah. And this way, I made a predetermined amount I want to spend for that for that year. And then I just divide it by 12 and I take that out each month and put it. And, you know, it's only like, for me, it's only like, probably like $20, $30 a month, which really for just Christmas gifts, you're like, oh, that's not a whole lot. But after 12 months, people are getting some good gifts.
Yes, it adds up. And planning ahead, and like you said, not getting hit all the time, and realizing that it is money, and you know, you can't keep digging that hole all the time. So that's a good way to handle it.
And what else is really neat at the top of this, like, I have, it tells me what my total income was, and then it also has like total remaining out of all my envelopes. So if I want to do a quick check, I'll just log into my bank account, my bank online, and see how much is in my checking, and it should be, you know, maybe minus 50 cents here or there. It should match up with my total remaining, so I know I'm on track. Yep. If not, then I need to take a little time and go in and see what's happening.
That wraps it up for episode 154 of Tech Talk for Teachers. Show notes for this episode and archived episodes are available on the web at the EIU Instructional Technology Center website at eiu.edu/ITC. To leave a comment or suggestion, please send an email to techtalk@eiu.edu or leave a comment in the Tech Talk for Teachers blog. Until next time, this is Tom Grissom.
I'm Cindy Rich.
I'm Mike Joya.
Keep on learning.